are listening to Community Voices on NPR Illinois. I'm Vanessa Ferguson, and today we're getting to know our neighbor, Susan Dees Hartgrove. Susan, hi. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for asking me.
We are going to be talking about biology, about gardening, about butterflies today. But first, we always like to get to know our guest a little bit. So can you tell us, how long have you lived in Central Illinois?
Probably most of my life, except for college and two summers.
Where did you go for college?
Iowa State.
Can you tell me a little bit about what has kind of kept you busy in life and what you've studied and maybe in your professional career?
Well, I graduated from Iowa State in 1979 with a bachelor's in zoology and stayed an extra year to finish my secondary teaching certification and returned to Springfield, where I grew up, and have worked and lived there pretty much ever since.
So talk to me a little bit about wanting to get into zoology. Like, I know in your kind of professional life, you do work in biology. Why that kind of career path? I feel like it's very interesting, but with everything that you could choose from, why did you choose that?
Well, I would say my passion is nature, and specifically the biological world, plants and animals. And the zoology major was natural because it was very versatile.
So I just am now kind of imagining you as a kid. Were you that kid that was always going outside in nature and bringing things in the house? And your parents were like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Uh-huh. They drew the line, though. No snakes.
No snake. Oh, wow. What kind of things did you bring in the house, though, other than snakes?
Oh, let's see. Snails, slugs, toads, bugs. You name it. My brother and I were partners in crime, if you will.
I love that. I really, really love that. That's very, very cool. Now, one of your passions has been butterflies, and we're going to talk a little bit about just that before we talk about other species that might interest you. But, you know, the monarch butterflies, I was telling you this before we started, you know, I'm a big fan of butterflies, and like a kid, I'd play outside and always see them every summer. And I started noticing the last few years, I'm like, I don't even know the last time I saw a bunch of butterflies, let alone sometimes even one butterfly. And that seems odd to me. So I'm wondering if you can kind of talk a little bit about your interest in that specific species and then also get into why we're seeing such a shortage of them.
I've been interested in insects, moths and butterflies in particular, for 60 years. So I've studied them, followed them throughout that time period. Monarchs in particular were very common when I was a child. And when I found out that they were proposed for federal listing by the Fish and Wildlife Service in 2014, at first I didn't believe it.
And what does that mean specifically, proposed for listing?
Sorry. It's kind of what I do for a living, so I think people know about it, but thanks for asking. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service lists species as endangered or threatened if they are in danger of dying out, becoming extinct. And so the monarch was proposed for listing. It's a big, long process that has many different facets to it. But if a species does end up on the endangered species list, like the bald eagle was for many years, as was the peregrine falcon and many other species that are well known to people, then those species are legally protected. And so if the monarch were to be listed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, then it would be legally protected and there would be restrictions, if you will.
So talk to me. I think you're about to share what your reaction was when you heard that they were being considered for that listing. What were your thoughts?
Well, I quite frankly did not believe it. And so I got a hold of the listing petition and read it and thought, well, the petitioners are well-known nationwide international monarch experts. And so this is for real. And indeed, as you've noticed, the butterfly populations, the monarch in particular, have really plummeted. Over the last 20 years, the monarch's population has probably declined by up to 80%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You mentioned some restrictions, and that's interesting to me because it's, I think sometimes when we think of endangered species, we think of overhunting or something along those lines. And it's not like people are going out and capturing all the monarchs and hoarding them for themselves. So what kind of restrictions are being put in place, and what is causing this decline in the first place?
Well, what is causing the decline? There are several different potential scenarios depending on which group is studying it. Habitat destruction is probably the primary reason for decline. Pesticides, new pesticides that didn't used to be there 20, 30 years ago. The monarchs winter in central Mexico, and there are threats down there, logging. They overwinter in certain kind of conifer forests, fir trees, pine trees, and the people who live down there are subsistence people who, quite frankly, need the trees so they can make charcoal and make fires and eat and live.
Right.
And so there's that pressure. There's all kinds of pressures on the monarch.
So then when we get into restrictions, how are those helping the monarchs?
Well, in both Canada and California, one has to have a permit if one would handle a monarch butterfly. In this country, with the exception of California, to my knowledge, you don't need a permit to handle a monarch. If the monarch were to get federally listed, there's the potential of permits needed. That way, people would think twice, and only, you know, the super responsible people would be able to handle monarchs. And again, I have no idea whether the monarch would be listed, and if so, what kind of restrictions there would be.
Mm-hmm.
There would be habitat restrictions. As part of my job, I work with endangered species and with listed species. If we encounter those on our projects, then we have certain kinds of coordination we need to do with state and federal agencies.
It's interesting because it seems like a little bit of a unique problem. So when we hear this and we feel motivated to bring back the butterflies because they're so beautiful, and obviously they play a part in the biodiversity of our environment, what can we do to help this species in particular? Is there anything that you would recommend that we maybe consider for those of us just wanting to do something in our own backyard, in our own community?
Yes, you most definitely can do something. Anybody can do anything, even if you live on the 10th floor of a high rise, like downtown Chicago, for instance. You can plant milkweeds, which are the only kind of plant that the caterpillars can eat. And we have 21 native species of milkweed in Illinois, ranging from all different kinds of habitats. So depending on what kind of habitat you have, you could plant milkweed for the caterpillars. And for the adults, the butterflies, they need nectar plants. They need flowers. And if you live on that 10th floor, you can have a pot of milkweed, or you can have a pot of cosmos or marigolds or penta, or, you know, a whole bunch of different kinds of flowers would work for them.
It's like, twist my arm, like, make me plant flowers. Oh, okay. Oh, I guess if I have to plant flowers this spring, I will. No, I'm just, that's a great suggestion, Susan. And, you know, one of our sister programs statewide, they just did a segment about bison and how integrating that species back into our agricultural landscape, you know, that can significantly improve the reemergence of some of our more native insect species. And I'm wondering, it's one of those ideas when I was listening about it that I'm like, that's so simple and yet so brilliant. And I'm just wondering, is there anything else out there like that that could help us out with that environmental species diversity? Anything like that that comes to mind?
A couple other things people can do is adding to the body of knowledge about monarchs. There's a lot that is not known, and there are websites out there. One of them is called Journey North. And when you first see the monarchs migrating through next spring, you can go on that website and document it.
Oh, okay.
You could probably document it on iNaturalist, although I confess I've never done that. But Journey North keeps track of all this stuff, and not only just monarchs, but I think other migratory species like birds. And that is really helpful because that tells the scientists, the experts, when the monarchs are present and, you know, how soon they are coming up north from Mexico. And then that in turn might help them predict how robust the summer population might be.
That is very cool. It's kind of like we get to play our own part in the scientific discovery and tracking of these insects. That's very, very cool. If you're just joining us, this is Community Voices on NPR Illinois. I'm Vanessa Ferguson, and today we're getting to know our neighbor, Susan Dees Hargrove, who has spent a lifetime getting to learn about butterflies, monarch butterflies, and other native endangered species in our state. And Susan, I'm wondering if you can talk about some of those other endangered species that may not be on our radar. Obviously, the monarch butterfly is the ones we hear about because they're so beautiful and it's something we notice, but there are other species that are probably needing some attention. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
One of the groups of animals that people don't think about a lot is bats. There are several species of bats that are in dire trouble. And one of them that we work with is called the northern long-eared bat. And in fact, it has just been uplisted, if you will, by the Fish and Wildlife Service. It was threatened. Now it's being uplisted to endangered. And actually, the problem with the northern long-eared bat is because of a fungus that attacks it and kills it. It's a fungus or a bacteria, I forget. Anyway, it's a disease. And they overwinter in caves. And so think about the kind of conditions in a cave. It's just perfect for this disease. And so a lot of them have died because of that, and it also affects other species of bats. So because of that, where I work, we have seasonal tree clearing restrictions. The bats summer, if you will, in trees. And so we are not allowed to remove trees in the summertime. We have to do it in the wintertime. So that makes it interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes I think when we hear endangered species, we think, oh, well, it's on a list, so they're working on it. It'll be fine. They're going to take care of it. I don't have to worry about it. But is that really how we should approach it? Or should we be looking for things to do at home? Like you said, maybe not taking down trees in the summertime or planting those milkweed plants. Should we kind of have that approach as it's being handled, or should we be a little more active?
Well, I would suggest for those who are really interested in the environment is get on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service website, because they have a lot of information about the various species that are listed, and they also have a lot of excellent suggestions on conservation. And beyond that, I would just say be mindful and live a conservation mind in life.
But I have heard a few people say that, you know, they want to be environmentally conscious. They want to help out those species like the monarch. But sometimes they find it challenging in an urban environment, because sometimes if they let things grow, it's seen as not taking care of their yard or their lawn, or it's reduces home value if you're the house with the weeds or whatnot. And I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts on that? Is there anything we could do about that issue?
Well, that's actually a really excellent question. I know a number of people who have attempted to put in pollinator gardens, do the right thing, and they get pushback from their neighbors. And there's resources out there that can address this. In other words, low-growing, attractive plants that are, you know, good nectar sources for monarchs and other butterflies. One can find out that information. If you want a real life example, I would suggest that you go to downtown Petersburg and take a look at some of the native plantings they have around the courthouse. It is stunning. And that is due to and she doesn't know I'm telling this, but this is due to Elena McKean of Star Hill Forest. And she really is a go-getter. She's very active with the Illinois Native Plant Society, and she has just done wonders in Petersburg.
Well, good job, Petersburg. I'm from Petersburg, as listeners know. So, and they must be doing a good job, because I've walked by it and I never thought it looked overgrown. I always thought it looked very nice. So they're doing a great job over there. That's excellent to hear. Now I'm going to shift a little bit, because I want to learn a little bit more about you. It's my understanding that you dabble in a bit of farming. You have a business called Beak Freak Farm, and I love the title, first of all, but I want to learn more about this. So what is this that you're doing?
Well, the title comes from my husband. We are all about birds. We met counting birds, but he named it Beak Freak Farm. He has parrots, and he has always had parrots his entire life, and we have three kinds of poultry. So we are...
Oh, God, it's not the parrots, is it? We're not selling parrots?
No.
Okay.
We are not selling parrots, no. No, we have chickens, turkeys, and guinea fowl.
Oh, very cool.
We sell eggs, and we currently have a run on eggs, as you might imagine. And we sell, you know, baby turkeys and baby this and that to people.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're freaky about our beaks, if you want to think of it that way.
Is there anything else that I didn't ask you about today that you'd like to share before we head out?
I would just say enjoy nature as best you can. Enjoy the creation that's around you and try to live responsibly and go to the Illinois Native Plant Society sale in May.
Okay.
If you want to buy native plants and help the monarchs.
And where is that sale going to be at in May?
That will be at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield. That's the second Saturday.
Excellent. So this is where we can get some of those native plants that need to be planted more often, so we don't have to search all over. This is a great resource for that.
Oh, yeah. It's an excellent sale. The Central Chapter INPS is an excellent group. If you want more resources on that kind of thing, get on the Illinois Native Plant Society website, navigate to Central Chapter, and it'll keep you busy for a while.
You are listening to Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. Keep listening for more interviews.